A false friend is the hardest thing to see. Cause when times are good, well, our friends are plenty. In times of trouble, well, not one in 20. Just when I thought, real good friend I found, to pick you up, to let you down. Hey, we were friends, we were friends.
True words were never spoken. That's Stephen Marley, the son of the Great One, a son of the Great One, there are others, with false friends. And, well, we'll see the significance of the song as we go along today, and we're talking about the Democratic Party, there to talk about. So that is from his 2011 album, Revelations, Part 1, The Root of Life. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And, of course, we have come to the mercifully, we have come to the end of the second round of show and tell, or Q&A, which they insist on calling the Democratic Debates. Very interesting changes popped up, and I want to see how many of those differences from the first to the second that you detected. So, but it's all wrapped up now. The second round of presidential show and tells at the Fox Theater in Detroit, Michigan. You know, considering that it's the halfway point in a four-city tour, what's shaping up to be the Democratic bill of particulars against Trump? We learned today that the majority of House Democrats are now supporting an impeachment inquiry. Well, that's a very big change. And that raises even more questions about what is happening within the Democratic Party, because that was not the case just a week ago. A week ago, even the party leader, Nancy Pelosi, was still holding strong to her belief that opening up impeachment hearings was just not a good idea right now. She just explained it by saying that it would cause too much of a disruption in the body politic. And besides which, she thinks that the Democratic Party ought to tread lightly on the matter of impeachment. But since then, we've had now the second round of Q&As with the candidates. And first of all, I would ask you, what did you call from yesterday's second round in terms of a discernible difference between the attitudes of the candidates and the attitudes of the party? Let's start with that question, and then we move on to related questions. Again, just to remind you, that was the second round of debates, quote-unquote, being held by the Democratic Party. There are two more to go. We have the next one being held in Texas, at Texas Southern University, between September the 12th and 13th, same ritual of breaking up this herd in two to accommodate all the candidates who, according to party rules, qualify to participate. That debate is going to be held at Texas Southern University, which is a historically black college. We'll see how things go. But for the moment, we have two debates, as they're calling them, down. What did you notice in terms of attitudes, or what differences did you note in yesterday's debate? What is the significance of it to you? And who do you think stood out, if anybody? Gwen from New York, you start us off today.
Hi, Yatrice. And full disclosure, I have to tell you that because these debates are not being aired on analog TV, unless you buy cable, you can't see them. I found out this morning, went to YouTube. However, I heard a lot of excerpts from the debate. I've been listening to different radio shows talk about it. So I do think there was a big difference in Tuesday and last night. And the candidate that stood out to me last night, I don't remember her name. I think she's, but she was the one that took on Kamala Harris about her record. And she actually disclosed a lot of information about Kamala Harris and her prosecutions. And I thought that she impressed me the most last night because I think that information is really important to get out there. I think they called last night's debate dark and kind of depressing. Some people did. But I actually think it probably looked more like a debate because people were actually interacting in a way that wasn't all chummy and just answering questions. That said, the big difference to me was that there were no answers last night to me with any of the candidates. This was basically a group of people that are imposters or clones of Hillary Clinton. And this is where the Democratic Party wants us to go, and that's why they were saved up for night two. However, the night before, we had a much more progressive group of people on, and who stood out to me, I really liked how Bernie handled himself, and the reason why I still like Bernie is because the concepts that all of the Democratic candidates on Tuesday night were talking about were born through him. It didn't matter whether you believed this type of politics before. He's the first one that took a chance and spoke about them in a national forum. And whether people like him or not, he has pushed the Democratic Party much further to the left than anyone else has been able to do. So you see a bunch of candidates that are basically not even acknowledging the fact that he's the one that came up with this concept and put it out there, and they're jumping on it, trying to tweak it. I'm talking about Medicare for All, and try to show their changes to it. But the fact of the matter was, it took a maverick kind of thinking to jump out and say, this is what I think we should have, and that's what grabbed my attention in 2016. So I thought on Tuesday, he did a very good job, but I thought that Marianne Williams, and you can poo-poo what she said about reparations or not, but what she said is true. And it doesn't matter that, to me, even if she's only saying it as a talking point, it is the first time I have ever heard it put out there in a national forum like that. So whether you like the candidate, whether you think she's exploiting the idea, it doesn't matter to me. The idea has gotten out there, and it got that out there with clarity. And a lot of people, I mean, when I first saw her the first time, I kind of, you know, thought she was a nut. And when I heard this yesterday, I thought, well, this is very interesting. And it took a lot of guts to say that. There's a lot of people that are not going to like it, but there's a lot of people that apparently did like hearing it. So I thought she kind of broke out of the line of horses and was able to kind of do a Kamala Harris in Tuesday night's performance. But to me, I think one of the things, when I was listening to Brian Lehrer speak this morning, NPR is one of the propagandists for basically a centrist Democratic Party. The last thing the Democrats want, the absolute last thing, is Bernie Sanders. They absolutely do not want him. They won't speak his name unless they absolutely have to. They won't show him on TV unless they absolutely have to. And they're grabbing for straws right now, thinking, okay, we can work with Elizabeth Warren, so if we have to speak somebody's name, we'll speak her name. And I like Elizabeth Warren. I have been watching her for a long time. But where she lost me last time was when she just glommed on Hillary Clinton and just kind of went crazy with her support of Hillary Clinton when she must have known the background of Hillary Clinton. And so she lost some points of credibility there. And in addition to that, I feel that when she finally did get to the place of power, she capitulated several times when she could have. She knows so much about the banks and how they operate and the thievery. And she settled for some really watered-down bills under the president, under Obama's administration, and backed down, many times to fights that I thought were that she could have really taken on. So to me,
let me ask you. We've witnessed two of these Q&As so far. What is startlingly apparent in these two sessions that we have looked at or listened to? What would you say is one of the most startling things about these candidates?
I don't know individually startling about the candidates or the group as a whole.
Yeah, what they're saying and what they have put forward for our consideration.
I'm not really sure how to answer that because given I'm not sure, but no, that's not fair to laugh at me because I was not able to watch the whole thing. Okay,
I'm not laughing at you.
Something that's this important should be on regular analog TV, okay? It should not be for just the rich fat cats that can put CNN on. I really resent that. I don't buy TV for a good reason, but money is one of the reasons.
I have no televisions at all.
Okay.
None.
So to me,
I used to have three. I gave them all away years ago. I'm looking at this and I'm following the debates such as they are on my phone. I refuse to buy a television.
Right.
I'm not going to do it.
So,
all right. Here's what I'm getting at. The candidates spent a lot of time talking generically, talking about themes that are important, whether it's reparations, whether it is about student debt, whether it's about medical costs, but none of them really took on the chief subject that should be on everybody's mind. They're busy telling us of their grand ideas, but not how they differ from Donald Trump. They even engaged each other, you know, trying to score points against each other. Is that the point of a debate? How do you differ? That's the question, don't you think, before everybody? How do you differ from Donald Trump and his administration? Everybody's busy trying to impress us with their grand ideas. That is not the point at the moment. We expect that you have some ideas. We expect that you have different views. But hardly anyone used the debate for what the debate is for. It's not for chopping each other down. It is for telling us, educating the public as to why you are in this game. What is it about Donald Trump and his administration that is so odious that must be, you know, he must be put out of office? Nobody really undertook that task. Which means that the candidates were not properly schooled. It was assumed, well, you know what to say. You have things to say, so go out there and say them. But if you had understood, if anybody in the Democratic Party had understood how important these so-called debates are, you would do an orientation session. To assume that they know what they're doing simply because they're up there, they made it to the podium, doesn't mean they know what they're doing. This is not a session for people to explain themselves. They'll have more than enough time to do that. What they should have done, all of them, is explain to the voters and would-be voters how in very significant ways they differ from the guy who's in the White House. But instead, they use their time very poorly. What should have been done? This is just my opinion. If you are the leader of a party, you try to get it across to people. I mean, they're not professional debaters simply because they have held office and they know a thing or two about politics. It doesn't mean that they know what they're doing. They wasted way too much time challenging each other. That's not what we're interested in. Tell us definitively why Donald Trump has to be put out of office. The significant ways in which he has offended any reasonable-minded voter. And why that is your goal. That is your primary goal in this race. I watched this and I said, no, this couldn't possibly be the case. It means that nobody in the party actually schooled them on what a debate is. And why they are there behind a podium. We're not interested in what you want to get done as a candidate. We assume that the reason you are there is that you have some ideas. You have a thought about changes that can be made. All that is to be assumed. I don't assume that you're there to fight with this candidate or that candidate and insult this candidate or insult that candidate. You're behaving like an old-time Democrat. And you've wasted two good opportunities so far to tell the people how and why you differ from what we have had to live with and what is going to be proposed that we live with in the near future. Nobody attacked Trump in a systematic way to let the people know that there is a great difference between what each individual has to say and what this president has done. Nobody did that. Which means nobody schooled them. They just assumed, well, you know, you've been elected, you've been in office before, you know what to do. And that is a recurring problem with this Democratic Party. It has not educated its members as to what the tactic is. There was no tactical approach here. The tactic was, or should have been, you hammer, not each other, you hammer Donald Trump. I'm sitting there listening 2 hours of this stuff. And we end the evening not knowing how and in what definitive ways. Not only do you differ from Donald Trump, but you prove him to be the worst possible choice on any level. Pick any level. and compare what you are thinking to what he has demonstrated that he's thinking. How do you get to be in office this long and you don't know the fundamentals of debate? How do they do that? There was very, very little evidence last night that any workshop was conducted, any education was given to candidates. They're not professional debaters. And the stakes are very high in this election. It's not about whether you win and he loses or he wins and you lose. It's not about that. It's about scoring points. You are a team. Was there evidence of teamwork? No. Everybody was an individual. There was no team there. Was there any effort at all to connect our misery with Donald Trump? Actually connect it so that people understand he's not a good choice. The Republicans understand this very well. And they understand the tactic. Here we have these dyed-in-the-wool Democrats being so taken with the idea that they're having debates. First of all, there's no debate. And if there is to be a debate, it's not to be between or among the candidates themselves. The debate is which system of governance would you choose? Here's what we believe. Here's what I'm working toward. And that's how you conduct a debate. They had no team. Everybody is out for themselves, which is the problem that has hobbled the Democratic Party for decades. Everybody wants to be a winner. Everybody wants to be a star. No evidence at all of teamwork. No evidence at all of strategy. We know you. We'll get to you, and you'll have your opportunity to, you know, expand your points and explain further. But the first objective is to disable the target, and that is done by explaining the differences between you and the target. That's all you have to concentrate on. You have 8 minutes max to explain yourself, to explain why you were born, why you are here, what you've forgot. To explain all of this in 8 minutes, you can't do. So the strategy should have been to develop some kind of cohesive plan. And you have big arguments going on between and among the very people who should be telling us ways in which they are united. Yes, like any family, you know, I grew up in a large family. And, you know, there are times when you can't believe that your parents did this to you by having this brother or having that sister. But when there is a challenge, everybody has to unite. Everybody has to come to the table and divvy up the duties, which is to disable this man. We know you don't agree with the things that he has said and done. We understand that. That's a given. What we don't know is, what is your thinking? What is the party thinking? what is the strategy here? But they fell into the trap again. And this demonstrates to me as an observer that this party is very fractured. And that is why a leader, any leader in a situation like this, will arrogate or would tend to arrogate a lot of power and authority to him or herself. Because in the end, each of them is fighting to be a star rather than as a member of a team hell-bent on disabling and dismantling this administration. Now, if you had to choose, which choice would you make? Would you use your time to have quarrels in public and to, you know, deride your fellow contestant? No, that's very poor behavior. The Democrats needed to convey to people that the situation is extremely critical. And that's why they're not wasting time with the usual garbage of trying to impress people how smart they are. Okay, we'll say that you're smart. Okay, fine. But nobody took the time to dismantle the technical differences. Nobody did that. And so I have to now ask another question on top of the first question. Does Donald Trump have anything to fear from these candidates and from this party? They're not ready for a fight. They're ready to be elected. That's their mandate. That's the mandate that they're following. When the task at hand is so clear, the task at hand is to dismantle and destroy this racist system of governance and to send the president packing. That is the objective. I don't want to know how you feel about busing back in the 50s and 60s. That does not advance us at all. I don't want to know about, you know, ideas that you have. You're not yet elected. You can have all the ideas you want. There's nothing you can do about your grand ideas. But if you engage me and you tell me what the tactic is here, in this moment, this very critical moment, because another term for Donald Trump is fatal. They're not acting like it. They're acting like, well, we're going to have another election, as you know, and I'd like you to vote for me. Even Biden got his own call out wrong. This is the problem I have with this Democratic Party. And because they are so casual about something so serious, everybody is casual too. When this party ought to be communicating to all of its actual and potential voters, we are fighting, we are in a fight for our lives. We're fighting a serious issue here that will determine whether we even go forward as a nation. Are you going to have a nation with people who can't even get together on some basic points and strategies at a time like this, you aiding and abetting the enemy. You're aiding and abetting the other side, the people who are doing bad things to you and to all of us. The message should have been communicated that we are in the battle of our lives. And we're serious. And this is not some intellectual exercise. We are trying to gain every inch of ground. We're trying to reverse everything that has been doing us in. We're trying to dislodge this president, because even the courts, even the apparatus that we have to work with isn't working. They're not working. We have this work to do. I don't want to gather and waste 2 hours listening to you tell me what your future plans are. Not when it's questionable whether any of us would have a future. You see what I mean? I think very differently. This charade that they're doing is to give Nancy Pelosi some breathing room to come up with some other silly explanation as to how the party is functioning as a party. It's not functioning as a party. Anybody could come to the same conclusion. If you study what we saw, you can see how broken the Democratic Party is. You can see how misguided they are, how unguided they are. Who needs people like that? And then you're going to tell people that it is their job to elect the Democrats, okay? And you're showing me right here in the very moment that you should be communicating how serious this matter is. You don't look particularly perturbed. You're not conveying that there is a serious emergency here. You're not. So as far as I'm concerned, and it only took two debates to show up all of this stuff that the Democrats have not done. And they think now, because the situation is urgent now, they have to respond somehow, but they don't even know how to do that. I don't want to hear about individual candidates, not at a time like this. At a time like this, all hands are to be rowing this boat. That's the only thing that matters. I don't want to know about your individual plans for your political career or the career that you used to have. This is completely irrelevant to me. What I want to know is whether you really fully understand that we are in a live or die situation politically. It's not ordinary politics. So I am not looking at your sets. I'm not looking at all that flashy stuff you've got going on television. I'm not interested in how snazzy the moderators look, because I understand the game that they're playing in front of our eyes. Distract you until one day you wake up feeling woozy. And that's when you realize that while you were asleep, there isn't not even a square centimeter of your body that hasn't been punctured. And you bled out. This is not a time to be unfocused. I've been talking about this. Now, if as a novice, I could see the problem as clear as day, then I have to go to the next level of questioning. How could you miss this? How could you miss the position you put yourself in? And if you have strategies, why would you deny us some kind of knowledge? I know you can't or won't tell us all that we need to know, but we need to know something. If it is to be assumed that we're all working toward a particular objective. Instead, you're telling us, well, we're having debates. What are you debating? You don't even know how to have a debate. So you're wasting our time. And we are being bamboozled. And we've been down this road many times before. And it should not happen again. Ma'at, you're on the air.
I want to zoom out and look at a larger aspect of all of this. Last night on MSNBC, the person who actually predicted that Donald Trump would win in 2016 amid, of course, horrible grumbles, was the filmmaker Michael Moore. And I thought he had an interesting analysis regarding the late Ann Richards, former liberal governor of Texas. And she said that this wasn't often repeated, but she said that since World War II, that white males have only played a role in a electing two Democratic presidents, and that was LBJ in 64 and the second term of Bill Clinton. And so what the whole point was that somebody like Biden is actually the worst possible candidate, because Michael was saying the millennials, the younger people, women, people of blacks and people of color are the ones that you base that will elect the next president, and the ones that you want to get out. So basically, we see the mealy mouth Biden. He's not up on his game in terms of being articulate. Gaffes. He didn't express himself very well. Is actually the least likely to be successful, and he reminded us that Donald won with only 77,000 votes. There was a lot of suppression in Michigan of all places, and he said the Republicans and the Russians, you know, suppressed.
Yeah, well, you know what? In a time like this, we have people, all kinds of pundits, showing up all over the place to tell us or to share their insights and their knowledge, their expertise. Where the hell were you when leading up to all of this stuff that I just talked about? We're not interested. I am not interested, and I'm not listening anymore to all of these experts who nevertheless did not prevent what inevitably occurred. So all that knowledge means what to me now?
Well, the fact that he was someone who could see that Donald was going to win,
but
he certainly wasn't rooting for him.
This is old news. He has said this before. This is what he said to launch himself as the great political thinker. How could he have missed the opportunity to also educate people about changing the outcome this time. Now, people like that really irritate me.
Well,
standing
well,
on the sidelines, people are dropping dead all over the place. They're being brutally assaulted. And what we get is, you know, the people who know so much on the sidelines trying to tell us, you know, what they see. You know, what is the point?
Well, the point is the idea that someone who's considered so-called moderate, like Joe Biden, is probably the least likely person that would be successful.
Again, if you're listening to what I'm saying today, I'm making a plea that we should move away from individualism and try to deal with things systemically for a change. What is the point of it, well, this is what I'm talking about. You know, Biden is being attacked. Okay, I also noticed he seemed a bit tired. He's been seeming a bit tired lately. And he messed up on this email address or the how to connect with his campaign and whatnot.
He misspoke several times.
Yes, but at the same time, that tells you why, if he misspoke several times, you saw it, I saw it, millions of other people saw it, including the leaders in the Democratic Party. Why is Joe Biden allowed to go on a stage and embarrass himself, embarrass the party, with these missteps? Who is counseling the candidates? Just because you had an office and you had some high profile and so forth, what is the leadership of the Democratic Party doing? Who is counseling the candidates? Have they had meetings as a group to discuss what the tactic ought to be? Every small thing matters. When the former vice president, under a well-loved president, is seen as making these mistakes. I mean, on the other side of that, people deride Trump all the time for his gaffes. They're paying attention to him. And they're letting him know, you can't spell. You're a liar. You've told more than 10,000 lies since you're in office. People are watching him like a hawk. And we're so casual about it. We just think that in the end, people will come out and vote and support the Democrats. Have we changed?
That is my point. You know, that was the point that I think Michael Moore expressed very appropriately, that this idea that Joe Biden is the one is, misled. You know, you're misled if you think that.
Well, again, we have seen the constant cycle of people who at critical times like this, they show up and they opine as if that is enough of a contribution. No, it isn't. If you are that knowledgeable, you should be in a situation where you can either change the situation yourself and declare your candidacy, offer yourself as an alternative. But they don't want to do that. They don't want to really commit to anything. but they stand on the sidelines and they opine. What use is that if the party is going to be losing? The party best situated right now to take on Donald Trump. The party best situated right now to take on Donald Trump is not the Green Party. It's not the Conservative Party. It's not any party but the Democratic Party. And this purism, we have to kind of deal with the reality that it is not going to help change the situation. People have to offer pragmatic and practical ways of tackling this problem because, you know, in the end, when things go wrong, as they will, I've been talking about people paying keen attention to the business of their survival. Some people have alternative ways of assuring their survival. Most of us do not. So for some people, this is an academic exercise. We're hoping that we win, but we're prepared that we can, again, put our shoulders to the grindstone if we should lose. For some people, this is not an option. They will not survive if we lose.
I think the point is the idea that you have to get that white working class, particularly the male, is a false idea. And I'll continue to listen. I have to step away, Utrecht.
All right. Thank you for calling in and contributing. Thank you. Chris from West Palm Beach, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrecht.
Hello. Good afternoon to you.
I saw the showcase last night, at least parts of it. It just, again, just reinforced what I already felt. There's no need to support the Democratic Party. And I guess I don't understand why.
You're cracking up and now you're fading out. So I don't know whether you're traveling or...
Do I sound better now?
Yes, you do. We could actually hear you.
Okay. I saw last night's showcase. It just reinforced what I felt, that the Democratic Party is not one to be supported. At some point, we have to walk away. You cannot keep hoping that they're going to somehow improve. They continue to show us every single year. And after Obama's presidency, there's nothing they have to offer. Nothing at all.
Well, I wouldn't say nothing, but certainly not what they ought to be offering. What is showing that they have not evolved as a party to deal with the demands of the membership, but instead have put a lot of energy into being corrupt.
Yes.
And that's seeing to their personal interests.
Yes.
So
they evolved.
So the onus is on us. We have to figure out what are we prepared to do about the situation. What are we prepared to do? And I come back to the original question: based on what we have observed, does Donald Trump have anything to fear?
No, he has nothing to fear. The Democrats don't want to win. If they just, for the sake of winning an election, if you're looking at polls and all the information, they had a chance to beat him in 2016. They chose to force Hillary Clinton down people's throats, and that backfired spectacularly. And they're doing it again, except with the male version in Joe Biden. But he's even worse than Hillary. He can't even stay on message. He's calling Cory Booker the future president. And that's who they're forcing on us.
Well, what do you think is a possible way out? A solution?
there won't be a quick one. People just have to organize and form new party. That's the only thing, because the Democratic Party, the hierarchy of it, once you get to a certain level, they're not going to allow certain things to happen.
Well,
look,
2020 is right around the corner.
Yes.
Would we have time to organize, educate, raise money, form a party, and run, raise money? Would there be time to do all these things?
Oh, not in time for 2020, but at the same time, Trump, as far as I'm concerned, he's going to win next year, and we'll get 4 more years of him and 4 more years of the nonsense. But it has to be beyond that. 2020 is gone, just like 2016 is in the past. I'm already looking past 2020. Like I said, the Democratic Party could have won in 2016. They saw the data like everyone else saw the data, and they chose to run along with Hillary Clinton. They're doing the same thing again. Even last night with Tulsi Gabbard, when it came to her, they're sitting there. Other Democrats are calling her an Assad apologist for going to talk to Assad to try to figure out what was going on in Syria, which we already know what was going on in Syria. So the Democratic Party does not want to be that different from the Republicans. They want to continue to collect the money from their donors, and that's it. They don't want to rule or have power. And if they do, it'll be some more neoliberal, middle-of-the-road, Obamacare-style plans. You know, nothing that we really need as a larger society.
But let's deal with the situation at hand, because it's right in our face. Do you believe that there's any way to impress upon the leadership of the party that there is great concern about its direction, and even more so the fact that the party seems so splintered at this time, when the exact opposite is what we're looking for? We're looking for more cohesion, a more logical way of operating an opposition party. They're not behaving like an opposition party.
No, I just, for example, the quote-unquote squad, as the media is calling them, the young blood, the women specifically, you know, they're a little bit more in tune, in line with what's going on currently. And only thing we see is Pelosi, Hoyer, and the rest of them, including Cummings and the rest of the leadership, basically telling them, go sit down somewhere, stop making so much noise, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, we got this. Go rest yourself. We'll tell you when to come back on.
Yeah, we'll tell you when, you know, we need you. Until then, just kind of sit down and be quiet. So, you know, based off that, I'm just saying the leadership clearly is telling us time and time and time again that they're not interested in moving forward whatsoever. They want to just maintain the same status quo. They want to maintain status quo because it's beneficial to them.
I can't disagree with you at all on your points. I think you've hit each of them squarely on the head.
I would just say the best way forward would be for individuals to start looking to, you know, run in their local districts, you know, commissioners, get on some of these committees, you know, run for Congress, run for state office, you know, run for local offices.
The problem there is that you can't do this alone. This is not one of those things that you can do alone. You need to organize. You need to have a base. You need to have your act together. You can't go out there alone. You'd be destroyed. And
correct.
So we have to think very carefully of our options, especially in a time of crisis, which is where we are now. Thank you, Chris, for calling in today and for contributing so meaningfully. Thank you.
Thank you, Therese. You too. Have a good one.
Thank you. And that brings us to the end of our program today. We have to ask these hard questions, because in the end, What it means is that we are holding people to account, and not just for what they ought to do, holding them to account for the responsibility of our participation. You're asking people, the party is asking people for support, which they have done for a long time now. But it never accounts for its failures. And we can see one in the making. We have to convey to the party leadership that we are not satisfied with the way they're handling things and expecting an outcome that they look to us for. I've told you already, I absented myself from this whole charade more than 20 years ago. But we still have to fight, because this is the issue now. We're on the brink of ushering in yet another cycle of craziness, and everybody would suffer. Thanks so much for listening. Tomorrow, as you know, is Free Your Mind Friday. You can absolutely continue the discussion then. And as you know, as usual, you can discuss anything on Free Your Mind Friday. Bye-bye.
Them let you down, down, down. Them let you down, down.